And we're going to be starting now a longer series that will take us through the first half of the year looking at fire in the Bible. And we're starting this morning with a look at Moses and the burning bush. And in a sense, fire manifests the invisible. So take this match. It is made up of atoms that are held together by high energy bonds. We don't see that, but they're held together by high energy bonds. But with heat, these bonds between them can get broken and they release even more energy that we get to see. And so we get to see and feel the heat of these atoms being broken and reformed. This is, well, you get the picture. And so, in a way, God, who is invisible, clothes himself and makes him visible, makes himself tangible, makes himself a little bit comprehensible through fire. And so fire is a big theme in Exodus. And so we have God clothing himself in fire through the burning bush. God is a pillar of fire that guides his people. And God is fire and smoke on the mountain. And John will talk about that next week. And I was thinking this week, why fire? Why not something else? Why does God use fire as this metaphor? And I think fire is a great metaphor for our relationship with God. We're drawn to fire. You know, you light a fire and you draw people. We could probably light a fire and we'd draw a group of teenagers. But fire also reminds us that it's dangerous. We have to keep our distance. And so Moses is drawn to the fire. He's curious about this bush that doesn't burn up. But at the same time, God says to him, Moses, I want you to keep your distance. You might need to just reboot it. Repress something. And Alec Motyer, in his commentary on Exodus, says that fire reminds us of God's holiness. That holiness is not so much this idea of God being, you know, spiritual. Holiness has this idea of separateness, of uniqueness. And so God says, don't come any closer. Take off your sandals because the place where you are standing is holy ground. And so Alec Motyer in his commentary on Exodus says, fire emphasizes the separateness of God and the exclusion of the human. That God is holy. And as humans, we are to keep away because his holiness is dangerous. Holiness is also active. I don't know whether you've thought about it. Holiness is active. It's not passive. If you like to think of it this way, holiness is a verb, not a noun. Motyer in his commentary says, it embraces all that conforms to God, but it burns away all that offends. And Nadab and Abihu, who were the sons of Aaron, they took God casually, and God actually destroyed them by a fire in Leviticus because they offered unauthorized fire. They got too close. They got burnt. Think about the death of Christ. We're reminded in Romans that the death of Christ satisfied God's active holiness against sin. Because God is holy, he can't ignore sin. He can't say, well, it doesn't matter. It matters greatly. God is a holy God. He has to burn everything that doesn't correspond to him. But the amazing truth of the gospel is that Christ was burnt in our place so that we could then become God's children. So some questions for 2026. Think about it. How can I embrace more fully the work of God to conform me to the image of Christ? How can I embrace that? Perhaps think, what does God want to burn away that offends him? Perhaps it's not some major sin. Perhaps it's something simple. Like I think for me, I just find myself enormously wasting time on my phone. And maybe it's like focus on and think about some better things than your phone. Think about, where does God want us to do some pruning work in our life? And remember, pruning is not a bad thing. It says in John 15, God cuts away wood that doesn't bear fruit and it's burned, but he prunes every branch that is fruitful that it might bear more fruit. So how does God want to prune us this coming year? One more observation as well, and this is something I learned this week. I had always thought growing up that it was God just speaking through a fire. And most of the pictures of the burning bush are just this bush, and we assume God is just a voice in the bush. But the text makes it clear that the angel of the Lord was in the burning bush. Moses was afraid to look at the bush because he was looking at God. Somehow God was in there. And so I was wondering, and I found this picture. I looked at loads of pictures. Maybe this is a closer one, a bit like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who go into the fiery furnace, and the king Nebuchadnezzar, sees an angel in there. Perhaps Moses sees the Lord himself standing in the fire, speaking to him. We don't quite know what it is, but the text lends in that direction. And so commentators have suggested that this is a theophany. Excuse the complicated language, but this just means it's the pre-incarnate appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. Because if you look at other passages, it says that Jesus took on flesh for all time. And so perhaps what Moses saw was Jesus himself speaking to him through the bush. I'd like to explore just briefly this morning what this passage tells us about God's presence. I think knowing God's presence is the key to following him. Knowing that God is there affects how we think and feel and act. When I was a teenager, we got told at our youth group, if you are alone with a young lady, you need to put a chair out there and imagine Jesus is sitting in the chair watching you so that you would behave yourself. But if you know God is there and he's watching you, it affects the way that you respond tremendously. Vice versa, if we feel alone, it affects us tremendously too. And that's why I think one of the works of the evil one is to convince us you are alone. God has forgotten you, because it will make us miserable. It will make us ineffective in our faith. And God says to Moses, I will be with you. I will be with you. And I love this. I can't remember who actually gave the quote, but I've just sort of put it down as best I could remember it. We already are in the presence of God. What is lacking sometimes is an awareness of the presence of God. God is fully present in his creation. He's fully present here this morning. What we sometimes lack is an awareness of his presence. So God's presence in the past. God says, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Interestingly, the commentators don't know whether it says, I am the God of the fathers or of your father, literally Moses, your father. But God is saying through this, I am the God of your ancestors. I am the one who was writing the storyline. And Moses might not know it at this point, but God is writing his storyline. God has been writing his storyline all of his life. And here we find Moses. He's 80 years old. He's kneeling before a burning bush, listening to God. But God has been with him throughout his life. And we know that because, thankfully, Stephen in the book of Acts gives us Moses' timeline. He tells us that Moses was 40 years in Pharaoh's court, getting educated, the best education of the Egyptians. He was 40 years in Midian, herding sheep. And then he was 40 years leading Israel. So just think of that. Two-thirds of his life was preparation for what God was calling him to do. And so in Egypt, he got this education. He could read and write. He could lead. God was preparing him, I guess, to write the first 5 books of the Old Testament. In Midian, he was herding sheep in the very desert that God would later bring his people to. And so I'm sure Moses was gaining knowledge about the desert. He was gaining skill at living in the desert. He was also probably getting a lot of patience too, learning how to herd and look after sheep. A little detail that you pick up from the text is that he lived with Jethro, his father-in-law, who was the priest of Midian. I'm sure Moses was also learning some priestly duties. He was going to become the leader and set up all the sort of priestly system of Israel, and he was probably learning a lot of skill. I think he was developing character too. He'd been broken many times, and we don't pick it up straight away, but we're told Moses was tending Jethro's sheep. He didn't have any sheep of his own. He had no legacy. He'd been 40 years looking after his father-in-law's sheep. He probably was pretty fed up by it, thinking, you know, my life has come to nothing. I don't even have an inheritance. I'm looking after my father-in-law's sheep. And maybe his character was formed, and we read later that he was a humble leader. And so for all of us, God is at work throughout our lives to develop our character, to develop our skills, to develop our experience. Moses is called when he's 80 years old. You know, we're an older congregation, and I just hate to say it, but maybe some of you have a calling now that you've reached an age that God can suddenly start and finally start using you. And a great book that helped me is called The Making of a Leader. And this man called Robert J. Clinton, he looked at historical and biblical leaders, tried to identify some patterns, tried to come up with some ideas for helping you grow and sort of go the distance as a leader. And he said some of these lessons that we learn from timelines is patience. God's developing us over a lifetime. 1/3 of Moses' life was active ministry. And he says to leaders, God is interested in character before fruit. It helps us with resilience, especially when we go through hard times, because we think to ourselves, well, I'm going through a hard time. It seems like the end, but actually God is still writing the story. And so maybe we feel old. Maybe we feel tired this morning. God is still writing your story. And it also gives us perspective as we look back at our past and see how God is developing us. As we look at where we are right now, it helps us to plot a course for the future and make good decisions about the future. So that's God's presence in the past. What about God's presence in the present? There's a little tongue twist there. Presence in the present. God says, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Jesus actually uses this verse to the Sadducees who don't believe in the resurrection. He says, God did not say I was the God, but I am the God, that your ancestors are presently alive with God. Your ancestors are raised by God. In amongst all this sort of idea of God being present, God has this amazing statement, I am who I am. Jesus also repeats it, as we saw in our prayer time, several times in the gospel. He claims to be, I am the bread, I am the light. These are terms that were given only to God, and Jesus takes them for himself, thereby claiming, you know, people like to say, well, the idea that Jesus thought he was God came 300 years after the New Testament was written, but no, it's right there in the text. And I looked up about this word, I am who I am, and they said this is about trying to demonstrate some incredibly rich understanding to Moses about who God is. God is eternal. I am. I do not have a beginning or an end. I am. God is self-existent. It just means that God doesn't need anything to exist. He exists within himself. It comes up in this idea that there's this fire and it's not consuming anything of the bush. And so we get to see there's this idea that God doesn't need fuel. He is fuel, so to speak. It reminds us of his presence. I am. I am with you. I am close to you. I am listening. I am understanding. It talks about God as a deliverer. I am has sent me to rescue you. It reminds us that God is unchanging. He's reliable. He's constant. Our world is changing very rapidly. You might have seen the news yesterday. You know, we've got a little bit of an economic war about to happen over Greenland. Who would have thought that? And we need to say to ourselves, what's going to happen? I don't know, but I am knows. God knows. It's also a call to conformity. God is at the center of everything. We do not conform God to our image. We conform ourselves to the image of God. We do not make images idols, but we are called to worship the I am. God is the, if you look at it this way, God's at the center. Everything conforms to him. It also reminds us of God's presence in pain. Over and over, it doesn't just say one thing. It doesn't just say, oh, hey, I've just thought about the Israelites. It says, I've seen their misery. I've heard their cries. I'm concerned about their suffering. Their cries have reached me. I've seen the way that they're oppressed. God is so present in the pain that's going on. And think about, how does that apply to us? Well, we saw in Peter that perhaps the greatest way that God is concerned is that he has sent Jesus to rescue us from a spiritual Egypt. So Peter brings us out, that we've been rescued like the Israelites from Egypt. And that really is the greatest rescue, the greatest miracle, because Jesus says, it's better to save your soul than to gain the whole world. And so we have to celebrate that. Well, the biggest, best rescue has happened. But I think it also reminds us, when we suffer physically, and Peter does bring this forth, when we suffer physically, we are to patiently endure it. Because one day, he says, Jesus will appear and fully rescue us from all evil and pain. And he will glorify us. He will make everything right. And so we patiently endure it. He also says in 1 Peter 1:7 that we are to allow pain and suffering to purify us, to make us more like Jesus. And that comes out in Romans 8:28, where God works for the good of those who love him. So that's God in the past, God in the present, God in the future. I will be with you. When you go back to Egypt, I will be with you. God says to him, and I find this amazing too, because a lot of miracles happen in Egypt, but God says the biggest miracle that's going to happen is, Moses, you're in front of this mountain, and one day you're going to bring the people back, they're going to worship me here, and you're going to remember that I have sent you to Egypt to rescue my people. I want you to remember when you come back here that I am with you. Think about Yahweh's name. I am who I am. God's everlasting name throughout all generations. So that's the future. God is saying, my name will exist throughout all generations. What guarantee do we have that God is with us right now, this week in 2026? And I think one of the biggest guarantees that we have is the resurrection. If we hadn't got the resurrection, we would be in a hopeless state. But Jesus is alive. That's what the book of Acts is about. Jesus is building his church. He's at work. We also have the ascension. I've been reading a big commentary on Revelation, and it talks about the ascension is very important because Jesus goes up to heaven, and the angels say the way that he went up, he'll come back. We don't know when it will be, but Jesus will come back. He will come and get us in the same way that he left. In a few days' time, it's on January the 27th, they will reset the doomsday clock for this year. And that began in 1947 after World War II. They had a clock and they tried to say, well, how close are we to the end of the world? And they set it at 7 minutes to midnight. In 2025, we had reached 89 seconds to midnight. So just over a minute and a half to midnight. Just under a minute and a half to midnight. Where will it be in January 2026? I'm actually interested to see where they've set it. And our world has some tremendous problems. Tremendous problems. But we need to remember, and this is important, I am who I am. I am who I am. I will be with you. God goes with us personally and as a church. God goes with us as a village into 2026. God waits for us, as Peter says, Christ waits for us. to come and get us and to bring us into eternity. I want to close by connecting the burning bush to Jesus. I told you, like, we want to preach the gospel. And we want to think, well, where is the gospel in the story? And Moses is told to keep away. Keep away, Moses, because I'm holy and you'll get burnt. We have Jesus, and I believe Jesus is the only one who could stand in the fire. But Jesus comes out, and he's a man. Fully man and fully God. But he takes upon the sin of the world, and in a sense, he goes into God's fire. And all that is of not of God is burnt up. He takes the full judgment of everything that offends God. But then it says in the Bible that we don't have to be afraid. Because Jesus has taken everything and he's clothed us in his righteousness. And we can boldly approach the throne of God in prayer. We can boldly approach and look at God as if he was our Father. And so that's the gospel. Jesus took the fire. So we didn't have to be, don't come closer, because you'll get burnt. We could be, come closer and stand with me in the spiritual fire. But also I think the gospel's there because Jesus calls us to go. And we miss this, but there's some big callings in the Bible. Abraham, God says, I want you to leave your country. I want you to go to Canaan and I will be with you. Moses, we love the story of Moses. You know, big fella, God says, I want you to go to Egypt and set my people free and I will be with you. And then when they come out, they get to the promised land. Joshua, he's a great leader, strong military man. God says, you're about to enter the land. I want you to go into the land and I will be with you. And we think, wow, these big stories, but how do they relate to me? Jesus says, go and make disciples of all nations, and I will be with you until the end of history. And it got me to thinking, you know, I like to read these stories and go, wow, what a big calling. But actually, Jesus gives us a big and high calling. We think about Moses. We think, wow, he's got this mega calling. But do we think to ourselves, actually, we have a calling that's as big as the calling of Moses? Because it's the same kind of wording that's used. God says to Moses, go and I'll be with you. And the disciples would have picked it up. Jesus says to them, go into all the world and I will be with you. You think to yourself, this is the God of the Old Testament who's calling me in the New Testament. And so we need to realize that our calling to go into the world, to share the gospel with others, to live out the gospel, comes with a high calling, as high as that of Abraham, as high as that of Moses, as high as that of Jacob. And so in closing, as we consider God revealing himself and his presence to Moses through the burning bush, I hope that it helps us to have some fire this morning. You know, this is the God who has appeared to Moses, who is before us. I hope it helps us to hold on to God's fire as we look at a changing world, as we think about our own spiritual passion. God is with us. He wants us to have fire. But I think it also helps us to hand it out to others, to think to ourselves, you know, God is calling me to go out and rescue people from darkness. God is saying, trust me as you do it, I will be with you. And so the closing question is this: will we go and take the fire of God's gospel to others? Will we take his fire and will we hand it to others? Amen. Let me just pray. Lord, thank you so much for Moses, and we can learn so much from his life. And yet, mysteriously, the same words are very, very close to what you would say to us as well. Go and I'll be with you. And so, Lord, it not only reminds us, Lord Jesus, that you are the God of the Old Testament, but it also reminds us that we have this very, very strong calling. We have this calling to have God's fire, to hold on to it, but to hand it out to others. And so take these words and may they be like firewood in our lives. Set them on fire and stir the fires of spiritual passion within all of us, I pray. Amen.